WBUR.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Human rights in Mexico may be taking a turn toward the light. This past week, President Vicente Fox appointed a special prosecutor to investigate the disappearances of hundreds of leftists in the 1970s and 80s. Los Desaparecidos, people who were kidnapped, tortured, and killed when the Institutional Revolutionary Party, or the PRI, held power. It's only in the past 2 months that the government has allowed public scrutiny of secret files, evidence long denied, but it's a significant part of the political transformation in Mexico. President Fox defeated the PRI with his pledge to end government corruption and to prosecute those responsible for the disappearances. That means turning a harsh light on his predecessors at a time when the PRI is still a strong political force. Many human rights advocates say Fox has not yet gone far enough. They fear this new special prosecutor will have little clout against the soldiers and the bureaucracy of the old rule. Connection listeners, is this a sign that the times are finally changing in Mexico? And what are the costs and the potential rewards of the country's long-awaited investigation into the human rights abuses of its recent past? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You can, of course, join us online at theconnection.org. On the program with me today, Marie-Claire Acosta. She is Mexico's Undersecretary for Human Rights. Also, James Smith, Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, which recently ran a lengthy series on this. And Roderick Camp, Professor of Political Science at Claremont McKenna College and author of a number of books on Mexican politics. Welcome to all of you. I would like to begin with Jim Smith with the LA Times. Jim, the first significant step in this process began last November when the National Human Rights Commission made public those thousands of pages of evidence about the disappearances. Just tell us about what was released at that time.
Okay. Dick, and I think it's important also to put in context and note that the National Human Rights Commission, in fact, began its research into the disappeared still under the pre-government. I think it's important to note that there were the changes are not didn't come overnight with Vicente Fox's victory. That process began in 1999, picked up steam in 2000, and culminated in this very detailed report of nearly 3,000 pages in November.
Well, let me ask you about that, Jim. Do you think, or is it believed in Mexico that even if the old government was still in power, that the National Human Rights Commission report would have been released, or was it Fox and the new administration that did that?
Well, it certainly would have been released. Again, I don't think that that these changes have emerged entirely because of Fox's election. I think Fox's election is an outcome of the nationwide pressure for these kinds of democratic changes. But there's also no question that the content of the report was dramatically enriched by Fox, who gave the Human Rights Commission for the first time full and open access to the intelligence files, and that was really critical in developing the detailed accounts of each of these 532 cases of missing people that the report describes.
But so tell us about the impact of the release of those documents when it happened a couple of months back.
Well, I mean, first let me just sketch quickly that of those 532 cases of reports of missing people, the report documented and confirmed that 275 of those people, in fact, were forcibly disappeared by agents of the state. And I believe 97 more cases there was evidence of such disappearances, but not proof. And in 160 other cases, there was no signs of government responsibility, but certainly those did involve people who were disappeared.
So what were we hearing about people who you're saying were forcibly disappeared? What were the stories in those files?
Well, I mean, the files, for example, detail intelligence reports of people who the state under the pre-government had said, we know nothing. They simply vanished. Now the intelligence reports say, yes, X person was picked up by our agents on December 14th, 1975, was taken to one military camp in Mexico City and disappeared. There's no detail, though I should add, and I think this is quite important, there's no detail of what actually happened, how these people were killed, and who did it. That's the next step.
Marie Claire Acosta, you are Undersecretary for Human Rights with the Fox government. Tell me, in your view, because you've got a history of working for human rights, what the impact of the release of all this information was in Mexico.
Well, I think the first thing that we have to point out is that it is the first time that a head of state in Mexico acknowledges that atrocities were committed by state agents. And I think this is a very significant thing. It's not a commonplace occurrence in many parts of the world. And I think it is vital for a transition, the kind of transition to democracy that we want. Now, there may be many points that are still very unsatisfactory about the way that we are going to deal with this issue, but all in all, I think that it is a relief for society to know that finally these things are going to be clarified.
I want you to explain that a little bit further for me, because when we compare the story of the disappeared, the 275 that are confirmed in these files, and I suspect many more thought not yet reported, to stories from Chile, for example, where it is thousands, does that mean that it has somehow less impact among Mexicans, or do people in the country see this also as a really dramatic turning point?
Well, I mean, I think if you ask the man in the street, you know, if these 275 cases or these 500 cases have any direct impact or significance on, you know, their lives, your answer, you might get disappointed with the answer, because we did not have a military dictatorship. I mean, we did not have the series of traumatic political events that led to a campaign of state terror as in other parts of Latin America. But I think that the whole issue of disappearances has had a tremendous effect on Mexican institutions. The whole system of justice, I think, was corrupted by the whole procedure of clandestine operations where people were kidnapped, tortured, assassinated, and there was no accountability, no transparency. And this has led, I mean, this is a very well-documented issue. This has led to, I think, a progressive corruption of the system of justice.
And it's probably important to point out that it wasn't just rogue cops in some state distant from Mexico City. This was, and it's been marked by Edgar Cortes, head of the Pro-Human Rights Center in Mexico City, state policy at the time.
Yeah. And I think it was very important for the National Human Rights Commission to say this was state policy, and for President Fox to say this is not going to happen again, and we are going to see how we can clarify this. Now, many of us would have liked a truth commission, for instance. I think that what came out, this special prosecutor, is a sort of an intermediate solution between a truth commission and you know, bringing whoever is responsible to justice. But I think that it is an important step forward, that we do have to support this. I mean, I think we have to bet on the success of this. I know it's going to be very difficult. There is a lot of skepticism, a lot of lack of enthusiasm among many sectors of civil society. There are still very strong resistances within the government. But this is a major step forward as far as I'm concerned.
Roderick Camp, you're professor of political science at Claremont McKenna College. I'm interested in your perspective, whether or not you see the new president with this special prosecutor and what he said so far. Is he taking the bold steps that are required, or is he tiptoeing ahead more carefully than that?
Well, I think it's somewhere in between. I think Marie Claire really identified the sort of the broader issue in the terms transparency and accountability. I think the point that your listeners need to understand is that basically in Mexico, the entire criminal justice system was part of a compromise system in which many of those actors were the same individuals who were committing the human rights abuses. And these particular abuses, that is, these disappeared people, and there are hundreds of other people who aren't even mentioned or known about by the documentary evidence, is just sort of the tip of the iceberg of a multitude of human rights abuses. So that what I would say is that this is symbolic of a much larger issue, which is the issue of the culture of law, and is Mexico going to be governed by law, and are the people who are responsible for enforcing the law going to protect the rights of individuals as they implement the law? And that's really the broader issue as it ties to democratization and to Fox's administration. So any step in that direction is a positive step, but as Marie Claire indicated, this is ingrained as part of the both the legal process and the criminal justice process, and involves certain institutions such as the military, which need to be altered in order for these attitudes to change.
You're talking about the bureaucracy and the military, which all those people took their position under the PRI. But when we look at the political scene in Mexico, the PRI still holds power in, or the majority of seats in, the Senate and the Chamber of Deputies. How difficult will it be for Fox to go beyond the steps that he's taken so far?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. It's part of a larger political issue. In other words, he needs the support of PRI or one of the other parties to get his legislation through Congress. And I think the reason why he's been somewhat tenuous in his steps is that he doesn't have a lot of political capital after his first year in office. And consequently, he doesn't want to create what I would describe as a witch hunt to go after all of these individuals that are allegedly responsible for human rights abuses. And therefore, that makes the task more difficult. But it's also, I think you have to remember, as part of his change and part of electoral democracy in Mexico, Fox is relinquishing a lot of power that normally in the past the president would have exercised at the state and local level. And those states and local governments are now controlled not only by the National Action Party, but by the other two parties, including PRI, which has close to half the states under its control. So consequently, it will be a very difficult task to implement.
Connection listeners, Boxes of Files, only just released 2 months ago. Reporters, human rights activists are going through them, interviewing the people who gave their testimony to the National Human Rights Commission in Mexico, the steps towards a special prosecution, whether or not the people will be brought to justice. Do you see it as a sign that times are finally changing in Mexico? Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. We're talking about Los Desaparecidos and the files on the people who, during the 1970s, disappeared as a result of state policy in Mexico. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to have you join us with your thoughts about that. My guests are Roderick Camp. He's a professor of political science at Claremont McKenna College. Marie Clara Costa is Mexico's Undersecretary of Foreign Affairs for Human Rights. And the Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times is James Smith, and as I mentioned earlier in the program, was part of a lengthy series on this. Jim, I mean, in one of the stories that you wrote took you to Guerrero State, to the Cabañas family. Tell me a little bit about the people that you talked to there.
Well, the Lucio Cabañas was, well, some would say a minor version of a Mexican Che Guevara, who was a school teacher in the late 60s in a small town in Guerrero, rose up against the state, went into the mountains, and built up a relatively small army of about 300 revolutionaries working in the hills, kidnapping people under very rough confrontations with army units, with patrols, barracks, somewhere between in the town of Atoyac de Alvarez, the members of the Cabañas family will say that just the family itself suffered more than 100 disappeared, and that over 300 in that community, certainly in the state of Guerrero, more than half the disappeareds come from the state of Guerrero. I think what struck me talking to these people and the relatives of these people, even now, 25, 30 years later, is just the depth of the personal impact of what it means to have had someone in your family disappear and not know what happened to them. They were detained by army patrols and vanished.
It sounds, though, I'm sorry, Jim, it sounds, though, that it's a complicated ball of wool to unravel, because we're not talking about, you know, school teachers who were in their classrooms, farmers who were in their field who were snatched. We're talking about people who had organized as some kind of small revolutionary force against the state.
Well, there's no question that some of the disappeared certainly were revolutionaries themselves. I mean, as Fox points out, and Marie Clara Costa has pointed out for many years, that does not justify disappearing them with extra-legal methods. But there's also no question that just having the name Cabañas in Guerrero in the 1970s could be a death sentence. Many people with Cabañas in there as one of their two names simply vanished. And I think there's no question that a number of those people in Guerrero State were innocent victims.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. To Boston, Rosa's on the line. Hi, Rosa.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Thanks for calling.
That's all right. I have a couple of questions for your panel. The first one is that a series of horrendous but very, very revealing photos of the 1968 massacre have been leaked very recently in an anonymous way to the press. So someone with access to very secret information is pressuring the government with this action. And I would like to know your panelists' opinion of who is doing this, why, and why now, and how much of this effort of opening really comes from the government and how much is just outside pressure.
It's a good question at this time, because we have Pascal Beltran on the line. He's the political editor of Proceso, a Mexican news magazine, which I think was the magazine where those photographs were published. Am I right, Pascal?
Yes, that's correct. We received 35 photos in Madrid that were handed anonymously to our correspondent, and we have published those photos.
And as Rosa's asking, were these photos being leaked to you from some government source? Do you know where they came from?
Well, as I said, the source was anonymous. We still don't know who handed these photos to our correspondent in Madrid. So we can only guess on who actually leaked them to us and on the intentions. My guess is as good as yours.
Tell me about the pictures.
Well, these pictures were taken in Tlatelolco on October 2nd, 1968, during right after the massacre, when the students that had participated in this rally were being detained by government agents, not in uniform, in plain clothing, and that identified themselves by using a white glove And these agents were part of a special brigade called the Olympia Battalion. This is the first time, by the way, that Mexicans have been able to see these pictures that were taken on the second and third floor and fourth floor of the Chihuahua building in Tlatelolco. We had only been able to see film and picture from the ground floor, where these students were actually handed to military personnel.
As you publish these photographs, tell me, if you can, Pascal, about how journalists working in Mexico, like yourself, are able to push both the new government and the old administration to further open this up. Is it moving at a respectable pace?
Well, as I said, we were not able to know who handed these photographs to us. But one thing is clear: there is still information in this case, photographs regarding the 1968 events. And I'm sure regarding the later events, the Dirty War events, that I have that are still in government archives and still have to be known by the Mexican public. So this is something very clear conclusion that we can make from receiving these photos, that there is still a great deal of material in the hands of the government. And it seems to me that there's no reason at this point that a government that whose main officials had nothing to do with the 1968 events and the 1970s events, there's no reason that they don't let the Mexican public know this information.
Marie Claire Acosta, why the delay then?
Well, I think if you look at the decree that creates the special prosecutor, it's very clear in the sense of saying that all of the archives that contain information relevant to those events and events that happened afterwards are going to be open to the public. They're going to be sent to the National Archive and will be classified there and will be available to anybody. I think that the delay had to do with the fact that only just a few days ago the special prosecutor was nominated and the whole thing will go into motion. At the same time, President Fox has announced that very soon there will be a law, or that they're working on a piece of legislation allowing for a freedom of information, which is something we have not had in Mexico. So I think that the delay is probably just a consequence of the fact that these things take time to set into motion. I don't think that there is any political pressure to stop these things from happening or these archives from becoming known to the public.
Rosa in Boston, Marie Claire is saying from her position of Undersecretary of Foreign Affairs for Human Rights that these things take time. Does that answer the question that you had about how quickly or how things are moving?
To a certain extent. It has a funny taste that...
Be specific. What are you saying here?
Well, all of a sudden, information is being made public without a clear trace. And very, very fast, there is a commissioner that is going to look into it, right? So it sounds like a very fast reaction rather than a reaction that may not have been completely desirable, but now they have no other choice.
Roderick Camp, from your position as professor of political science, do you see this as like a stone rolling down a hill? It's just gaining a certain amount of momentum that neither Fox nor anyone's going to be able to stop?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, as I said earlier, it's part of a larger issue of accountability and transparency that is highly visible, but there wasn't, as Marie Claire indicated in one of her earlier comments, there wasn't public pressure at the citizen level to make this a major campaign issue. That is, the specific issue of human rights. And the reason that you're getting these revelations, and I think I agree, I don't know who revealed these photographs, but this kind of material is going to start to come out from a variety of sources because people feel as though the time is finally right when something will happen as a result of that information being revealed. And in relation to your earlier comment, the press has played a very important role in all of this in magazines like Proceso. And it should be pointed out that journalists in the past have been one of the, as a profession, has probably been the single most important victim of human rights abuses, so that having the press play an active role in what I would call investigative journalism has been a very important contributor to this new environment favorable to exposing these past behaviors and bringing people to justice.
All right, Rosa, thank you for your call. Pascal Beltran, just to pick up on something that that Roderick was talking about, we know that just a couple of months ago, a leading human rights activist was murdered in Mexico. A note was left saying, don't do this anymore. I'm interested in hearing from you on whether or not you see the type of work that journalists and human rights activists are doing is still dangerous in Mexico.
Well, when you decide to become a journalist in Mexico, you know, this is there are many risks to this job. It's fair to say that things have been changing, and it's not so easy right now to harass or to murder a journalist or human rights activist. But as you said, Digno Ochoa's murder has is a chilling message in the sense that these things still happen, and I'm only saying that they don't happen as often as they did. But yes, to answer your question, it's still a risky business to be a journalist or a human rights activist in Mexico.
And Jim Smith, when you travel around the country talking to people, gathering the sort of anecdotes that you do, are you finding that there is a willingness to speak, or that people, just the ordinary people, are still reticent, concerned, afraid to speak out?
No, I think people are much more willing to speak. And what was, I think, important in the work of the Human Rights Commission is that much of the testimony about these cases has really just been taken in the last six or eight months. And there's no question that has to do with the transition.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about a large number of files which have recently been released in Mexico detailing the disappearances of hundreds of people during the 1970s when the PRI party was in power. We're interested in hearing from you whether or not you see this as a particular turning point in Mexico's politics, both domestic and the way that it's seen from overseas. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. To Cape Cod, and Raul is on the line. Hi, Raul.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen and ladies in the program. I have a question in my mind that says the missing Mexican nationals' records do not really consider, in my opinion, how many may have slipped across the border and disappeared in the United States from records on either side.
Do you mean people didn't, in fact, disappear as
a
result of...
Some of them, I do not believe, disappeared through violence in Mexico. I have the question in my mind that perhaps some have slipped across the borders into the United States and disappeared.
Marie-Claire, you've seen the files?
I have not seen the files.
Okay.
But in any case, what will happen there is that, I mean, the idea is that people will come through, I mean, will come forth, will bring their case to the prosecutor. The prosecutor will start an investigation, and then presumably we will be able to know the fate of many people who disappeared. I think what is contained in the investigation of the National Human Rights Commission are the cases of people who were kidnapped and forcibly disappeared by government agents.
And Jim, I know you have seen the files. Can you speak to Raul's point? I mean, is it possible that the people who disappeared are living a fine life in New Mexico, or are the facts there?
Well, I mean, it's certainly highly doubtful that happened in any significant number of these cases in which people were disappeared. I mean, I think when Marie-Claire says she hasn't seen the files, we haven't seen the original intelligence files yet, but the accounts in the Human Rights Commission report, which cite from those intelligence files, I mean, certainly in these, at least in the 275 cases, are very explicit that these people were taken into custody and never seen again. It's hard to believe that they were simply let go and returned, you know, to normal civil life. But I think that raises the key question of what's the next step in this process, and that is going to be how thoroughly an independent special prosecutor can in fact now go in trying to follow what happened in each one of these cases, and who pulled the trigger, if a trigger was pulled, and who will be held accountable.
Pascal Beltran, that's really the key now, how much power, how much latitude this new special prosecutor will have.
Well, yeah, that's correct, because we have to say that this prosecutor was named under the directive of the President of the Republic by the Attorney General. And we still don't know. Proceso is actually working on a story right now regarding the procedure in which the prosecutor was named. We only know that there were about 40 candidates, but we don't know why this person, Mr. Carrillo Prieto, was the person chosen to do this job. And as far as we have been able to investigate, human rights organizations their point of view was not taken as far as naming Mr. Carrillo Prieto.
Marie Claire, this fellow who was chosen, I had his name in front. Oh, yeah, Ignacio Carrillo Prieto was not a popular choice. Your government's been criticized.
Yes, yes. The government's been criticized for that. I think, I mean, as far as I know, many people were interviewed and for the job, and many turned it down. They turned it down because they felt that they weren't going to have the proper conditions to carry out the job. Others felt that they weren't up to par with the job. It's been a difficult process, and as I said before, there's been a lot of skepticism from civil society. I think that the expectations that this was going to be a truth commission and go and perhaps be totally independent from the government were the expectations that a lot of civil society groups had. I think that this is an intermediate solution. I think it is the best that the government could muster at the present moment. I mean, we are talking of a transition. And although Mr. Carrillo Prieto has more of an academic background, although he does have experience in, he worked in the for the prosecutor several years ago and then was head of an institute that does studies in criminology and criminal law, Instituto Nacional de Ciencias Penales. I think we have to bet on his success, and I think that now it is up to civil society and those of us in the government who want the truth to come out.
We'll talk more about that when we come back after the break. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. We're talking about the people who disappeared in the 1970s in the provinces of Mexico as a result of state policy, and the fact that the files are just being opened. A special prosecutor has been appointed, and we're asking the question whether or not this is, in fact, a turning point in the politics of the new government of Vicente Fox or of Mexico itself. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. My guests include Pascal Beltran, he's political editor of Proceso, it's a Mexican news magazine. James Smith is Mexico City bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. Marie Claire Acosta is Mexico's Undersecretary of Foreign Affairs for Human Rights. And Roderick Camp is professor of political science at Claremont McKenna College in California. Mr. Camp, I want to ask whether or not in this particular story, as the Americans are often criticized for interfering in Latin American politics, particularly when suppression of the left is involved, whether or not there is blame being pointed at the United States in this case?
There isn't blame being directly pointed to the United States in this case, but I think where the connection might be for certain critics would be the fact that the Mexican armed forces were very much involved in these disappearances that the evidence shows that a lot of these individuals were taken to military camp number one, which is in Mexico City, and that the connection might be for some people the fact that members of the armed forces who may have been involved in some of these activities received some form of training in the United States. And that has been a criticism that has been raised in the past among Latin American officers generally from other militaries in terms of their connection to U.S. Programs and U.S. training programs both in Latin America and in the United States.
The School of the Americas again. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. And we're going to Arlington, Massachusetts. Susan, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead, Susan.
Yes, this is Susan from Arlington, and I was in Mexico, and I believe Mr. Smith was there when I was in November. I was there to train women who are members of the PAN, but I also went to the free convention at the end, and I believe that's where I saw him.
PAN is Fox's party, just to clarify.
Yes, and one of the things I think might be making a difference in all this is the involvement of women in the parties. Of course, all of the women are either mothers or wives or sisters or what have you of a lot of the missing, and who in a lot of countries are the ones who bring this as far as they can with the government because of their passion and their fervor for finding out the truth. And with the involvement of women in politics, and while I was there, it was became evident with all the parties that they were most interested in getting youth and women involved because they are the future of the major parties. So I'm wondering if he might have a comment about that.
Yeah, Jim, I mean, as Susan's speaking, I'm thinking of the women in Argentina and Chile who hold up the photographs of missing sons and fathers and husbands. Was there anything similar to that in Mexico, or are the women at the heart of this?
Well, certainly the women have played, a key role. I'm thinking of Marie Clara Costa on this program, who I think for the first time under a Fox government is willing to take the risks involved in now defending the government, even when there are criticisms. And I think hearing her be very open about the skepticisms, I think is an important signal of the changes, not just of the role of women, but really of the opening, the apertura that's taken place in Mexican society very broadly, as I say, which I think Fox's election is as much an outcome as a cause.
Marie-Claire, maybe we can hear just personally from you about that, because in your own time as a human rights activist, you didn't have any of the constraints that you now have speaking on behalf of the government. Do you find it kind of difficult defending a government now instead of taking one on?
Of course, it's a difficult job, but it's not any more difficult than it was being a human rights activist under the PRI, I can tell you that. I think that, I can talk a little bit about the personal reasons why I'm in the government. I think that there was a very significant change as of the election of the year 2000. It was the first time that the Mexican people were able to vote, and their vote was a vote for a change of presidency, and their vote was respected. And this is a major step forward. It is the first stepping stone, if you will, for creating a democratic political system. I don't think we still have a democratic political system. I think we've taken the first major, very important steps. There are many things that have to be done still. We have a lot of reforms pending. But I was invited to join in this effort, and it was an offer that you cannot turn down easily if you're committed to democratic politics and to creating a more just and a more inclusive society. And so this is why I'm here. And I want to say something. We've been focusing a lot on the issue of desaparecidos, and we've been focusing a lot on the special prosecutor, and I think it's very important. But there are a lot of other human rights initiatives
that the Fox government has undertaken that I think are also very important. Perhaps they're not as visible, but that they will certainly underpin a lot of the efforts that this special prosecutor will be taking on. And I think one very important thing that this administration has started off with is a full acknowledgement that there are serious human rights violations in Mexico and that these human rights violations have structural causes. And what we have done is we have undertaken a major effort to open up to the international community and to ask the UN, all the human rights mechanisms of the UN, of the Inter-American Human Rights System, to step in and work alongside with the government and civil society to tackle these structural problems and begin to set up a national action plan for human rights. And this
let's talk a little bit
very important
further about that. Susan, thanks for your call to Reading, Massachusetts. Juan's waiting on the line. Hi, Juan. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Morning.
Good morning.
I've been listening to your program, and some so-called human rights defenders, especially in Mexico, are part of that front that includes the drug-running terrorism and separatism in Mexico.
You mean the Zapatistas?
Yeah, the Zapatista movement, the Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas movement, all the Lucio Cabañas and the Arturo Martinez Natera and blah, blah, blah. So many elements in Mexico in the drug-running, you know, are part of the group that sometimes uses international and national movements of protecting the human rights in a given country.
Pascal Beltran, maybe you can speak to Juan about this.
Well, I'm sorry, but his opinion doesn't reflect in any way the way I see things. I don't know if any human rights organizations are linked to drug traffickers. I have a great deal of respect for many of these organizations. I think they do a great job. The job Maria Clara Costa has done, for instance, I have a great deal of respect for it. So I don't know if any of the human rights groups in Mexico have links to these organizations. So I really have no comment on that.
Okay, Juan. Juan, last point to you. Go ahead.
I want to let you know is that I've been close to some intelligence groups here in the United States, and the reports, the serious reports of people who are trying to fight drugs, you know, are not the same as what you hear in the media or a lot of other human rights defenders. And I would like to send you the report if you give me the address, you know, for you to get another view of a different.
Okay, Juan, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line, and one of our producers will speak to you. I think, Jim, were you trying to get in on that?
Dick, sorry, I did want to follow up on that. I certainly agree with Pascal that it's hardly the human rights people who are, I think, running drugs. But the link between that issue and the issue of the desaparecidos in the past, I think, is quite important because, as we've said, if you take Sinaloa State and Guerrero State, Sinaloa was a state where many disappeared, many people disappeared in the north of Mexico, Guerrero as well on the coast. And those two states today are among the most lawless in the country, where drug trafficking is rife. And I think we come back to the original point that the disappearances, the climate in which the disappearances were able to take place, has to do with the lack of accountability, with the lack of rule of law in Mexico on the part of the state, where corruption was allowed to develop to extraordinary levels. And that is today reflected in continuing very serious problems in the areas where the disappearances were most prevalent.
To Greensboro, North Carolina now. Christine, you're on The Connection. Hi there.
Hi, yes. I'm actually a professor of Latin American history, and I came in late on your discussion. And my question is just whether this fact-finding mission is going to result in creating any accountability for those responsible for those human rights abuses. Because traditionally in Latin America, you have the fact-finding missions, and then people are not prosecuted or held accountable.
Well, that's what it comes down to. Marie Claire, are people in Mexico going to go to jail over this?
Well, I think that I really think that now, for the moment, the ball is in the court of civil society. I think that if
well, people why isn't the ball in the court of the government to act?
Let me elaborate a little bit on this. Of course, the ball is in the court of the government, and of course, the government is going to have to produce results. But if the special prosecutor and other government officials are not, if people don't come forward with their cases, with their testimonies, if these are not exposed, if there is not a close monitoring of this prosecutor and of other prosecutors and government officials, then perhaps the results will not be as satisfactory as we expect them to be. I think that this is an issue where we all have to come together and we have to bet on the success of this prosecutor, because this is essential. This is important if we want to build a democratic form of government. If we want rule of law, if we want accountability, if we want transparency, then we have to bet on the success of this. And this will depend on a lot of efforts.
Roderick Camp, you're also a professor of political science. And on Christine's call, are you also concerned that a year, two, five from now, that nothing will have been done as a result of this?
Yeah, I am. I think she's right. Particularly, I think your listeners should know that in the particular case of the disappeared, because the armed forces were very much involved, if these findings were actually implemented, the likely guilty parties would be high-ranking members of the armed forces, retired or otherwise, and therefore it would signal a significant, dramatic change in civil-military relations in Mexico, in the sense that the armed forces has never been subject, essentially, to civil law. And therefore, this involves a much larger structural issue in terms of this relationship if those findings were to be implemented and people were actually prosecuted under civil law rather than under military jurisprudence.
Pascal Beltran, from your position as a Mexican journalist, Marie Claire is saying people need to speak out. Do you think people are ready to speak out?
Well, it's interesting because the report from the Human Rights Commission is based 90% or 95% on on the testimonies the family of the disappeared or the missing have given to the Human Rights Commission. So I really don't see any new information in this report. The archives, the government files still have to be open. And it's very important. We'll see if the special prosecutor can do this. It's very important that he can open the military files.
Christine from North Carolina, thank you for your call. And to all my guests, thanks for spending an hour with us. Marie Claire Acosta, Mexico's Undersecretary of Foreign Affairs for Human Rights. James Smith, Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. Roderick Camp, Professor of Political Science at Claremont McKenna College. And Pascal Beltran, Political Editor of the Mexican news magazine Proceso. The Connection is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Rousseau, and Doug Sugarts. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
From Boston University, this is WBUR. We're funded.